Hello, everyone. Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. And we have someone who's sound shifting. She's a paradigm shifter that uses sound to change the vibrational storage or the patterns that you and I can have in our own lives. She uses sound to help you release yourself from all kinds of limiting forces like illnesses or probably psychological stuff, and has an amazing history of her own. Trish Devney was very, very ill, and she used sound, blow your socks off if you read her book, Sound Shifting, Personal Guide to Self-Healing. You watch her go through her phases of waking up to sovereignty over her own vibrational vehicle of light. Welcome to the show, Trish Devney. I'm so excited to talk to you about
that. Oh, I am too. Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
It really is. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We haven't been in touch for many years.
I know.
And those years have been full of process, progress, evolution.
Yes, and that squared.
Yeah. Now, you use sound, and you have an amazing voice. A spirit of the ancients is a current. Talk about the word current, a currency.
Right.
Spirit of the ancients is your latest product. And I noticed that the way you use the crystal bowls and your voice in it really moved through my body. So I don't know where to start with you. Why don't we start with you talking about how you got into sound and also the kind of vibrational anatomy of illness, because you've got some of that written in your book as well.
Well, I was always intrigued by sound. I grew up in the Catholic Church and loved the pageantry and the beauty of the Latin liturgy and the Gregorian chants, although I was always quite saddened. The girls couldn't sing the Gregorian chants. They were always relegated to the male voices.
Well, you know what? I grew up in that. I sang a lot of Gregorian chants.
Well, you had a progressive pastor, I think. Maybe. Real traditionalist.
But
I just want to say
about that chants have been used since time began to move people's consciousness. Just throw that little tidbit in. So keep going, darling.
Yes, and it has been at the epicenter of the birth of our own creative force called planet Earth and the galaxy itself. It was born out of sound. So sound is the unique fabric from which we emanate. And what I find so interesting and sad is that that's the first thing that seems to go as we start to mature as little people into adulthood. Mm-hmm. We start to swallow our voices or silence our voices or mute ourselves so that in order for us to, you know, engage the world and figure out how we play the game, oftentimes we have done this through silencing. So part of what happened for me was I had the great fortune of working with an acting company in Boston, and I had studied acting, so I knew about the force of sound, but I saw it or understood it in the context of performance, so I was able to project, not understanding that it was also a healing modality, which was later to reveal itself to me. Mm-hmm. So I had at one point been working with the Ohm Theater Company in Boston, and they had invited the Sufi Healing Order, or some folks from the Sufi Healing Order, to stop by and teach us some tones. Now, I was about 23, 24, so I didn't think much beyond these sounds as only an actor tool. So I treated them as such, and I filed them away. It wasn't until I was much more mature, starting my own acting company, and by that time I had also entered the realm of recovery. So I had stopped using mind-altering substances, and thankfully there were many of us in my generation who discovered that, oh gosh, I don't really get there from here. I only think I got there from here. So that really forged a new direction, and I started to work with the young people to create an acting company that would impact peers around the giving real information about alcoholism and drug addiction and recovery. So in the process, I had really discovered or rediscovered those sounds because I saw my young actors really in a very stilted movement pattern, and they couldn't get to their authentic stories really very well. So at one point,
you mean they were locked in vibrationally, would you say?
They were, good question, they were mentalizing.
Oh.
Their movements.
Mm-hmm.
So they were thinking, I'm going to move this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to feel this. It was all a mentalized expression. I wanted somehow to bypass that ego filter and get to something that was deeper. And it occurred to me to have them put sound on their movements. And as they did, I saw their world, their vibration, their energy field shift. And things started coming out that they had little control over, in that it was much more organic, sounded primordial, and sometimes was accompanied by big feelings, big sounds. And the more they did that, the more they understood that they were not at the effect of these conditions or these feelings, but they were, in fact, choosing to move in and out of them. So they really had developed a kind of emotional literacy and awareness that I think was beyond their years. They were really moving. And I attributed that later, as I look back, to these tones, these seven tones that I had introduced for them to use. So I had done this work for about 18 years when I was diagnosed with hepatitis C and liver disease, and I didn't really think much of it because nobody knew much about it. In fact, the Western medicine didn't know what to do, really. Mm-hmm. They had a few suggestions, and I avoided them. I just said, I'll just stick with the alternative modalities. And found that with my acupuncture, my viral load kept increasing. Mm-hmm. With various things I was doing, my viral load kept getting higher and higher. Now, I could peel away the linear understanding of this and really get deep into what I feel was really going on, which was I had to experience the world of sound in order to do the work I'm doing.
Mm.
So that was the gateway. I feel at some level I've done this for multiple lifetimes, if I've had that many. But many, many, many times. I understand sound from an intuitive place, but that's not to say that everybody has this awareness. I have a specific understanding of how to awaken that in the physical mass that integrates it with mind and spirit as well. So that was the gift I was being given. But at the time, all I knew was that I was told I was dying and to get my affairs in order. So I kind of did that at one level.
How were you emotionally? Were you freaked out by that, or did you believe it? Or
I was pretty chagrined. I didn't understand it because I didn't feel the way they told me I should feel. Mm-hmm. The way I anticipated being at death's door looked like or felt like wasn't what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
I was asymptomatic with my hepatitis. Though I had things looking back, I didn't know that that was a sign. For instance, lines that are right above the lip line that some think are aging signs.
Right.
I had them etched much earlier. I mean, I was in my 40s when I was.
You mean like whistle marks?
Could be, yeah. It's like that, just the aging upper lip, you know, where you get these vertical lines going up and down. Well, mine were like little gulfs.
Wow.
Little gulf streams etched. And that's at one of the liver meridians.
Oh.
I also had a spot where I had put an earring in my upper ear on the left side, and it never healed. Never healed.
Hmm.
Come to find out, that's the liver point. So I had little signals, but I had less awareness than I do today about what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
And simultaneously, I had gone to the Gem and Mineral Show and was
in Tucson, eh?
In Tucson, Arizona, and I was walked into a tent, and there was a big display of Tibetan bowls. I was intrigued, and they were just the most beautiful things. And I walked over and asked the guy how do I play them? What do I do with them? And he just handed me the wooden activator, and he showed me how to play it. So I picked it up, and it was as if time had stopped, and I had moved through a portal. I had opened my mouth because the sound of the bowl just asked me. It coerced me. I had to sing, and out came just the free tones. Nothing that I knew. Nothing had words. It was just a bunch of moving sounds that felt like it was moving on the drone created by the bowl. So when I stopped and action started again in the tent, there were thousands of people milling around and commerce going on. Nothing happened when I was in that moment. So I bought the bowl, brought it home, and started to play. And I did that every day. And then I again, not thinking that I could heal myself, I wasn't worried. Somehow I just had, in a meditation, I heard that I would die with this, not of it.
Oh, I see.
So I knew that somehow I was going to be okay. I didn't quite fully know how to dissect that message, but
no,
I felt, all right, I'm just going to go with it. So I didn't think in terms of healing anything because it just didn't occur to me. Once you get a diagnosis like that, and they tell you to get your affairs in order, I figured they knew. So I started to play these tones, and then I started to work with play the bowl, and then I started working with those tones, the same tones I had my young actors working with. And even though I was doing, at that point, the doctor put me on their chemical therapy, which is interferon with a pill of ribavirin. He had me on that with the idea of being on it for a year. And
How did you feel on that? Isn't that horrible?
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Can you imagine that? And I know it's the same potency as any chemotherapy. It's just a junky poison that's moving through the body. However, one distinctive feature was that I stopped being afraid. And I stopped resisting Western medicine. At that moment, I just let go. And it was interesting. It wasn't a capitulation. It was really an adapting. Somehow I adapted. And
like just, resignment? Sort of resigning?
Not quite. You know, a surrender possibly. Mm-hmm. But I didn't capitulate. It wasn't like, okay. Instead, it was, all right, you know, 1A, what are we going to do now? But the experience in my body was to just be at ease. So the fight left me. And the worry left me. The fear left me. And I found that that was possible because of the sounding I did on a daily basis. I was able to not be afraid. I didn't even think about fear. I didn't think about the past. I stopped thinking about the future. I even stopped thinking about present, and I just was in a state of is being, which was also a pretty amazing portal to sit in. Here I was in real time, just being. It was a truly remarkable and very accessible, I might add, experience to have. And it's something that is very common with sound. But again, this was a brand new experience. All of this, by the way, was intuitive. I didn't have a book to follow. And
But I do now, thanks to you, right?
Yes, yes. And well, that's why I wanted to write it, so that people could see that there's no great mystery to finding resonance if the desire is there, and here are the tools, and if you choose to, you can move into a state of resonance. For some of that, that's completely curative, where all of the symptoms are eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
And in others, it's just finding a state of grace and beauty. I found that there were a great deal of men, and I lived in San Francisco during the 80s, and there were many of my friends and neighbors, certainly my actor friends in the theater, were diagnosed and dying of AIDS. And it was through that population where I truly understand the nature of healing. And it wasn't about curing something. It was really about coming to a place where before they transitioned, they were free of the negative stuff, the fear, mm-hmm. the limitation. And they had moved into a state of forgiveness that was palpable.
Mm.
And you could see it in their being. It wasn't that they were preaching forgiveness, or they just were in that place.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a model of what it was to be in a state of healing, and I found that sound gave me that experience mm-hmm. of not having my worry junk, my fear, the noise I write about in my book, that noise of those patterns of thought that are based in fear and the smallness of who we are.
Well, and you know, Trish, I very often think and say to people, you know, healing isn't always about living, right?
Right.
Dying
right.
can be healing, and you just expressed it better than I did just now. Yeah.
Yes. And it's a state of harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and resonance literally means the state at which something vibrates in its native state.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing. It's on at various levels. We are moving back into the state of resonance, understanding who we truly are at a very deep, deep level of our DNA, as well as who we are at a level of light and spirit, and who we are mentally, where we are free of that kind of smallness of thinking, the limitations of thought. So that's
when you say, and that's wonderful, actually, when you say limitations of thought, thought can actually leave densities like pockets of tangled up frequencies, can't it?
Isn't that a good way to read it? Absolutely. It really does. And it becomes, the more we repeat a thought,
mm-hmm.
It just becomes layer upon layer upon layer of density. So we find we're sitting there just waiting for things to change.
Hmm.
And some of us have, eventually creates dis-ease in parts of the body, wherever there's greatest weakness. You know, and it's very interesting. I have found various ways of thinking, even in the New Age population, where we really do still hearken back to that Calvinistic mindset, that you're being punished if you're sick or you did something wrong, you offended God or something happened like
mm-hmm.
that. And when I went through this, I realized that my disease was only a gateway mm-hmm. for understanding. And if I was willing to go through that portal and adapt to the experience of being in this body, I could shift, and I did.
Hmm.
I did. My doctor, I should have had a great deal of scarring in my whole body, gastrointestinal tract for sure. So in 2010, by the way, when I was free of the disease in 2000,
okay.
That's when he saw, when I went back, and after 3 months, he said he couldn't understand really what happened, but there's no virus there
mm.
right now.
Woo-hoo.
But he was made sure that he said, right now. So
right.
he anticipated, it's coming back, girl, so don't get so happy. And
but you had the confidence to be beyond his consciousness at the time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, especially by not fighting him.
Right.
by not having to see him wrong and me right,
mm-hmm.
which was the subtlety of that kind of letting go,
hmm.
was that I allowed him his little bubble of understanding, which was fine for him. And simultaneously, I created my own domain, which knew that I was always in a state of well-being, however that was going to show up. I just knew I was creating a dual paradigm,
mm-hmm.
a dual experience with my thought and allowing him to have his. I didn't have to fight his. So when I moved into, whenever I move into a fight, an argument, a need to resist something, some thought, someone, I'm engaging with their energy field.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm downloading their junk.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a good way to put that. Mm-hmm.
So I find that if I move into understanding that this is their field, this is their bubble, this is what they understand, that's cool. My understanding is different. I am in a state of well-being. And not having to lock into theirs to prove them wrong and me right.
I'm in a state of well-being and smooth out some of those densities you might have engaged in from other people. Is that right?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Big time.
Mm-hmm.
And then sound became the delivery system of that understanding.
Wow, that makes sense.
So I was no longer in that default position of fear in my thoughts, or fatalism, or wherever I went.
Or
victim, yeah, mm-hmm. that I was a victim of my conditions and the world, et cetera.
And God and karma and hoodly hoo.
The endless
yes.
stuff. Mm-hmm. And instead could observe it and watched it recede. So as you know, we don't get rid of this stuff. It simply doesn't get activated.
Mm-hmm.
So the fight's gone. I don't have to clean house in that way. I just have to move into a new dominant frequency.
Mm-hmm. I see. That's nice. Did you have a history of meditation before that?
No.
Mm.
I had a history of as a craftsperson. I was an actor.
Right.
And I love grace, but I'm not a sitting meditator. I was not good at that. And I found great frustration. I would sit down and try with everybody, and within, seconds, I was itching and squirming like a little two-year-old. And I just looked around. I mean, it was just awful. I felt like such a bad Sufi all the time.
That's great. I love that.
I couldn't meditate.
For people at home, because a lot of them think, oh, well, she was probably a good meditator, and that's why she could do that. And you're saying, no. But I do think drama is healing if people can get. I do think it's a very strong healing force as well.
Well, I agree, and I think the craft of acting is one of the mystery schools, if you really look at it from the true nature of what it is to discover the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
I had a great teacher I didn't study with him directly. His students came over and worked with us, but his name was Jerzy Grotowski, amazing man. I'm paraphrasing this, but one of his favorite things to say, and one of the things that really imprinted on me, was as an actor, we're always in search of how to do something. And I could even just say, as a person, we're looking at how to do this thing called life.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, at some point, you have to let go of the technique and risk everything.
And risk everything. Mm-hmm.
To disarm yourself. To reveal yourself to someone, that is to say, to reveal yourself to yourself.
Hmm. That's very good.
And that was the piece that moved me from simply looking at my craft as a commercial art experience and seeing that the stage was sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was great knowing, even though I was still very much in my active alcoholism and addiction, I couldn't quite get deep enough. Something deep inside was ringing.
Hmm.
So when I did get sober in 1980, I was able to, these things almost sort of elbowed their way up, and I had these little burps of insight
to be a great way of putting it. But you know that the burp to enlightenment is such a great, almost a paradox, but so true, isn't it?
Isn't it though? It has an aftertaste, it has an afterglow, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. It just sort of occurs when I breathe out. So then things started to evolve. I kept toning and sounding, and the doctor kept testing me, and it wasn't until 2 years out when the nurse called me into her office. And I have to say, to this day, Veronica, and your audiences might really relate to this, I can't tell you, because it was so unusual, I can't tell you if it was real or if it was real angelic.
Okay.
I can't tell you, because the nurse called me into her cubby after I was getting ready to leave after one of my doctor visits. She called me in the little cubicle and she said, "You've got to understand why he's mystified by your situation." She said, "You don't have a genotype that would have responded to interferon, so there is no medical reason for you to be well." Now, that seems like a comment that no one would make.
Like when most of us wouldn't even understand it, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So I can't say if it was a visiting angel.
But aren't nurses amazing? They often have such incredible wisdom that is not sort of blazoned on their history, you know.
Yes. And then that was the aha for me.
Wonderful.
I realized then it was about sound.
Great.
And I devoted my life to understanding what might have happened. I sort of went backwards. Okay, I'm healed now. What happened that brought this about?
Mm.
And I started to look for research, and there was some. And more and more there has been even greater research. And science, I think, is now embracing. In fact, I teach the young doctors at the University of Arizona Integrative Wellness.
Wow, that's wonderful.
About sound. They have a whole program that works with energy medicine.
Wow.
And I get to work with them with sound. And it's, you know,
they're
very open.
So that's the cutting edge, actually.
Yeah. It is.
They are open.
And
are they?
It's our future.
Mm-hmm.
They are open. They are very open. And it's my job to create the relatability to their organic experience, which is for all of us. We all felt really, you know, as children, we just sang these nonsense songs and hummed and just felt joyful and wonderful. And then somewhere along the line, the song was taken from us, or we were taught that it was not appropriate, or whatever, whether it was familial or cultural or institutional, doesn't matter. Somehow the breath was startled out of us,
mm-hmm.
and we became silent. So I find now, it's a joy to return to the individuals I get to work with in workshops or private sessions, the tools for them to awaken their own voice.
What are the tools?
Those are the sound tools that I worked with.
So they're just like tones?
Seven primordial tones.
Hmm.
Seven tones. Tones that we do in nature. Tones that we organically have moving through our bodies all the time. And you can start to listen to those tones. For instance, the root tone, the chakra, the muladhara, sounds like this. Well, when I ask my groups or my audiences, what does that remind them of? Most of them start to giggle, and then I say it for them. A good movement.
Those are things, and you do say that in your book, is the sounds that we make naturally are real tones, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And so for some reason, well, for various reasons, we have not allowed ourselves to express them. So we sneeze in these silent little, you know, these tiny little things.
Yes.
That would hold
us
back.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we hold everything in, and in a way, it's a great loss to how we occupy our space on this planet and how we vibrate. There's an exercise I do with my groups. I sometimes teach a workshop called the Soul Song, and it's just a free toning, much like what I did with my bowl. Mm. But what happens is that it's witnessed by a group, and the individual allows a sound to emerge without any control on how they sound. It's just what's coming from their heart. And it is quite extraordinary. I feel so honored to be able to witness someone's soul being expressed. And
when you say it comes from their heart, does it just rise through them?
Yes.
Do you?
And you know, the brain cannot quite figure out how that all happens. And it's really, you know, and I tell them, be mindful that the brain will get in there and say, oh, you sound really stupid. You sound dumb. You know, saying something we all know. You know, the brain just has this chatter going on. So if you just concentrate on your heart center and let that be your concentration point and just let whatever happens come out, it is the song that is felt and heard throughout the universe.
Would you be willing to do that for us?
Well, I could. I could. I could do a soul song right now so that you can hear what it sounds like. And every time you do it is different.
I would love to hear it. And I know that the people at home would love to hear it.
All right. So let me just move into a little spot. Drop into my heart. I am.
That was beautiful and so resonant. My body's just loving it.
And oftentimes it can bring tears. You didn't see me on this side, but they started to puddle. Mm-hmm. And it's just that one is touching something so deep in that moment. And it's never melodic in the way that the brain likes to think of melody. It mm-hmm. jumps all over the place.
So, Trish, tell me this and tell the people at home, if we looked at like the anatomy of an illness, to use Norman Cousins' ancient and very powerful book, when you're doing that, for example, when you're doing the soul sounds, it seemed to move in my body. It moved right through my body and pushed frequencies. That's kind of where the healing is, isn't it?
Yes.
So for people to do that themselves, it can move them out of even colds, right?
Oh yes. From you know, the common cold to any number of more grave patterns of dis-ease. However, what I have found with disease, if we've practiced a pattern of denial and stress, mm-hmm. and have set in an issue, it's most likely going to be the gateway for us to then transition and to have a renewed sense of resonance as we do that transition. So to not get locked into thinking it's going to be curative.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen nervous systems reconnected and people walking again.
Wow, isn't that wonderful?
I have seen people, well, in my case, hepatitis C. I've seen people with cancers where they are in a permanent remission. It doesn't mm-hmm. exist mm-hmm. any longer. So it is.
But you're saying you can't guarantee that. You just.
And there's no reason to think that that is the arbiter. That's your guideline.
But it does seem to me that you would feel more you. There would be a freedom to be more you.
Yeah, there's more freedom. There's more space in your life. There's more light in your body. And you may be preparing to transition, which is if we can do that and find our way free from the negative thought forms that keep us small, mm-hmm. we will have an easy transition to the other dimensions, and probably just go, you know, wherever we go. But I have found that this ease is really brought about through stress and I'm, you know, these are simple terms. What I see is more energetic symbols. When I start looking at somebody's body, I sort of hear patterns and see symbols in their body, mm-hmm. but I don't see them with my eye. I just have an intuitive thing that starts going on. What happens when a person opens up their own voice? Their voice becomes the delivery system through which their unique harmonics can restore resonance or balance to their entire body. So that's why it's key for each of us to open up our own voices and not rely on, say, me to do that. So when I get people on my table, I may put bowls all over them. And,
oh, so you use a table. You get them to lay down.
Okay. They're on a massage table, and I have about 30 different bowls that I put on the body that opens up and primes and recalibrates, if you will, their body. But it's their own voices. I start to encourage them to let them just find a tone, any tone, without, you know, editing themselves, and just start making that sound. What's happening is that the body is able to isolate and retrieve harmonies and frequencies and moves it exactly where it needs to go through the neocortex. So the body is able to receive the food, the harmonic food, and we don't have to send it a certain place. All we have to do is open our mouths.
And let it come out, you mean?
Let it come out.
How can you tell if it's coming from the body or the soul? Cheeky.
Well,
question,
at that point, it's the same.
Okay.
You know, it's one and the same. That's why, remember I told, when we were talking about the kids and the mentalizing their movements?
Right.
I could see that there was a dissecting going on, that they were thinking about moving their body parts, but they weren't connected to it authentically. So the sound really ensouled, allowed them to connect to the deep resonance that lives within a joint and within the tissue. And once you start allowing the emotional life to move, you're able to activate the light body, the spiritual awareness that exists in the DNA.
So tell me this, do you take on people with specific, here, I'll just be cheeky here again, and do you take on, say, children with ADD or people with Alzheimer's? Have you taken on extreme mental kinds of blocks and so on?
You know, I invite anyone to come, but I don't seek them out.
Okay.
I don't go looking for people with Alzheimer's to do specific, but with my own dad, we toned all the time.
Did it help him a lot?
It did. It also worked with frankincense, the oil frankincense. I would put a little bit on his temple and a little bit on his wrist, and then we sang our conversations. What was so wonderful at the end with him, I was teaching a soul song class out at a resort here called Miraval, and I had about 8 people in the class. It was right after 9/11 had happened, and I was demonstrating, much like I did just now, how the soul song goes. And I hit a high note. And when I did that, something in my heart broke open. I started to cry. And then I started to see a stairway a light stairway. And this isn't not unusual. Some people just get these visual images that might come as they're toning. And then I hit another note, and I started to see these gray vortices moving up this light stairway. And out of the corner of my eye appeared my dad.
Uh-huh.
And he was young, and he was wearing a brown double-breasted suit, style of the 40s, and he had a shock of black hair. You know, he just was himself and as a 20-year-old. He started to walk up that stair, and then he turned and looked at me, and he tipped his hand to his forehead as if to sort of wave goodbye, sort of, see ya.
Aww.
And turned up and disappeared. And I'm just, oh, the sound is coming. Because I know in the soul song, don't stifle it. Keep letting the sound move. So when I finished, I went back into my mind and thought of the guests, and I said, well, now this is probably just metaphor. My dad has Alzheimer's and he's getting ready to go. So I kind of explained it rationally. I get in the car to go home. My brother calls and he said, Dad passed. And I asked what time. And he said 4:30, which was the exact moment.
Of course.
I was demonstrating this.
Aww.
So sound was able to separate the veil of dimensions.
But wait a second, it also looks like you helped him release some of the sadder things that he could have taken with him with your sound, eh?
Yes.
So you could sound for someone else's process, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wonderful.
You could sound with them, and it becomes for them at the same time.
Now tell me, how long did he have Alzheimer's, and did it help offset the dementia at all?
I think he had dementia earlier in his life. You know, he started exhibiting signs about 5 years earlier.
Okay.
And then the Alzheimer's set in later, I think the last couple of years, when he had to be institutionalized because it was too much of a burden on my mom.
Yeah,
but I would go and visit him, and we would sing. And I was the only one in my family who felt comfortable to do that. And I think it was... I owe it all to my acting background because, you know, you get out into these odd places with actors. We talk to our elbows, you know, we make sounds from our toes, you know, so we don't think that it's anything odd. So my dad, who was also very creative, we would just sing like a little tiny opera, you know, we'd just sing a little nonsensical sounds and words, and he grabbed my arm and sniffed it, and then he put it to his face and cradled my hand. We were more affectionate in that time of his life than throughout my entire life.
Wow, how healing for you.
It truly was.
Well, I want to tell a tiny wee story. This is very short, Trish, but three of us were singing harmony in an Alzheimer's ward, and we were singing Christmas carols. And the woman playing the piano didn't have much memory, so she played the same songs over and over, which gave us a chance to do amazing descants.
Right. Oh.
Anyway, there was one fellow who had not spoken for 5 years, and he was flat out in his, you know how they stretch out the wheelchair. And then we were all singing, and people sang if they could, and a lot of people were just sort of in a trance. Anyway, all of a sudden, this guy starts with this beautiful voice. He's singing harmony in German, and he was singing Silent Night, Stille Nacht. And we all cried. But to me, I love this story because it reminds you, me, all of us, that it's in there, the sound and the music.
Yeah. It is the fabric of creation.
It's just beautiful.
Oh, what a beautiful story. Wow.
Well, so's yours. I love it. So tell us more about your soul. Like, what are you doing and how can we come to those things? Are you still working at Miraval?
I lecture and do workshops out at Canyon Ranch, which is here in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also travel around the country and well, the globe, I guess you could say, from time to time. I'm going to be heading up to Grass Valley in early August to do a series of classes and concerts.
And where are you going to do that? Maybe I'll come up and see you, because I would love
that would be
experience.
Great.
One of the things I was interested in while you're talking, your conversation is really brilliant. I'm enjoying it so much. But also, a lot of us would like to express and are going to use improv and that sort of thing to break out. And I'm going, I think I'd like to go do some soul sounding. I think that would do as much for me as improv. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, well, I think it's, you know, the typical improv teacher teaches from the craft and teaches a very different, has a very different goal in mind.
Oh, okay.
So, but it's fun. It's great fun. It's a great way to get out, to laugh, to develop a certain level of confidence. And I find that working with sound and the soul song in particular takes us on a different journey. So creation becomes something that is born out of your core DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what's happening now is that we're moving from the carbon-based body into the crystalline.
I know. Isn't that wonderful?
Extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
It's extraordinary. So
this would help us move. It would help people evolve.
Yeah. It expedites it. Oh. It. Because you're also working with the coherent field between the pineal and the pituitary. Mm-hmm. So you're getting more oxygen moving through the body, allowing more space and ultimately more light to move through the body. So I'm in this one class I'm teaching in Grass Valley, and I'm also up in Seattle and Portland teaching it. I'm teaching the tones, but it's a hands-on healing with crystal bowls. I'm teaching people how to work with these bowls, but primarily, or the first half of the training, is how to tune your own human system.
Mm-hmm.
How to use your own voice so that what you bring to that experience, if you're going to be working with someone or just yourself, you bring a sense of attunement that allows you to not interfere with their process and to
or not be debilitated by their own traumas.
And not be debilitated, right.
Hmm.
So,
well, tell me this. Don't you think as we move from the carbon base to the crystal, many people are in some level of angst or urgency to become more and more in their true nature and so on. It sounds like you can help with that, eh?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because the sound expedites and magnifies intent, and it also allows to move through these experiences like a pressure cooker experiences or depression or manic eating, you know, I mean, because these are all ramifications of this shift.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us who are, especially those of us who are much more sensitive, are exhibiting these kinds of signs of extreme fatigue. And to ensure and usher folks that they're not crazy, they don't need to, go to the hospital. What I would suggest is that they open their mouths and make the sound of ah. Now, what that's doing...
In a tone or just anyway?
Just ah, just moving a sound. If they can't move a sound with an open mouth yet, I'd encourage them to hum.
Okay.
And what's happening when they're humming or making sound is they're stimulating the vagus nerve. I think that that's the secret to everything. They call the vagus nerve the second brain, and it's a master controller.
And where is it?
It's sort of centered right at the base of the sternum, the solar plexus, but it starts at the brainstem and moves all the way down. It's the longest nerve in the body.
Right.
And it controls the immune cells and various organs and the stem cells. So when you're stimulating the vagus nerve, you are impacting digestion, absorption, and detoxification.
Mm-hmm.
So it's helping us to lower blood pressure. improve cognitive function, improve sleep. It's a litany of things to reduce the impact the impact of migraines.
Well, so is this every of the sound, all the chakra sounds, or just you're saying ah?
If all you do is able to hum,
okay,
you're stimulating the vagus nerve.
Wow. So tell me this. I was reading in your book something that I really love to do this with people is have people listen to their own voice and hear in that where they contort what might be flowing. You could probably say it better than I am.
Well, you know, oftentimes when we listen to our listen back to our voices, we wonder who that stranger is and who let them in our phone.
I know.
Number one. But the reality is that we do not vibrate through our whole body the sounds that we make. So there's a lot of grief that gets caught in the back of the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our tears get caught.
Okay.
So it changes how we vibrate. It changes if we're not breathing well, if we're breathing in the real shallowest part of us, and most people do. Then we're not getting enough oxygen to the brain. We're not getting enough vibration to the lower part of the body, which is oftentimes why we have issues with stomach, liver, spleen, etc., as I did,
mm-hmm.
because there's no life force or there's a lack of life force.
Well, that's where we digest life, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Mm. And so we've cut ourselves off.
Mm.
So, you know, when you really start looking at the deeper ramifications of opening the voice, you start looking at opening up more space for grace to move through our lives, as well as life force itself.
So just how you speak, Trish, that can also be massaging, if you will, or evoking for the vagus nerve.
Yes. I think that's another aspect of sound healing.
Okay.
It's how we speak.
Mm.
You know, the words we use. Because they also carry frequency, and they can be the thing that makes us sick.
So you can speak into your liver. You can speak.
Yes.
As yeah, this is exciting information.
Oh, it truly, truly isn't it, and it's empowering. And people often don't recognize how often they castigate and negate themselves. You know, they use words like, "Oh gosh, I really want to do that."
Mm-hmm.
Well, the want becomes the dominant frequency. And that want is a state that the body will maintain.
Mm.
And wanting is a belief that you don't have.
Right.
So you're holding that frequency. So what I encourage folks to do is just pay attention to the language and move only into commands or claims, such as I have, I choose, I love, I create. I feel. So all of those are stronger vibrations and key signatures than the I hope to,
mm-hmm.
kind of, maybe, should, want, someday. All of those phrases are not serving us.
Wow. Well, Trish, I hate to end this because I could... probably learned from you for days yet, and I may come up to Grass Valley. But in any case,
what fun!
One of the things you have a Sufi background, and I remember that. And quite often, we get people to sing their names in any tunes. What do you think of that?
To sing their name?
Sing their own name.
Oh, it's so powerful.
It is, isn't it?
So powerful. Yes, and. Yeah, I mean, I would encourage that for people. It's so cathartic. I often will do that in a group where the whole group will sing one person's name.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, my gosh.
And people will cry.
Yes.
Now, tell everybody how to get hold of you and how to find out where you're presenting next. And you know,
well, people can go to my website, which is soundshifting.com. And then there's a calendar. People these days are pretty accustomed to knowing how to use the bars up at top, and they have drop-down menus. So there's a calendar there. There are different things people can read about sound. And there are things people could order, my CDs or even the chakra tones. I have a chakra tone where I'm teaching a small group how to make the tones that I use. But then everything is also on iTunes,
mm-hmm.
so people can download. If they're going to download any of my CDs, I would suggest that they get the disc, because the CD was recorded with waveform, and it's so pure.
It's very beautiful, but also I want to say this, Trish, is that what you've written inside the CD cover is really wonderful material.
Oh.
People need to read that.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
I thank you so much for joining me on Paradigm Shifters, because this really is paradigm sound shifting, right?
Indeed, indeed. And it's been my pleasure to share this time with you and your audience.
And thank you for your work in the world, Trish.